Good morning, Chairperson, members and colleagues. There we go.
Thank you, Marcel. I think we still got 2 minutes left to have a quorum in the meeting.
Not yet, Chair. We're waiting for 2 members.
Okay, thank you.
Recording in progress.
Good morning, Chair, again. It's 10 o'clock.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Marcel. Do we have a quorum?
Yes, Chairperson, we can go ahead.
Thanks a lot. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, members. Good morning, the department and also our staff members. On the screen you have our agenda for today. The agenda is as follows: opening and welcome, apologies, and then we will receive a report on the SRT grant provision and intervention by the South African Social Security Agency, SASSA. We will then have deliberations. And after that, at 12 o'clock, we will excuse the department, and then we will continue with the business of the committee, where we will do the consideration and the adoption of the committee meetings. And if there's any other business that members feel we must discuss, it will also be open for discussion. We intend to close the meeting by 12:15. So members, can we adopt the agenda, please? Can I have a proposal?
Morning, Chair.
Good morning, Dongeni. You move for the adoption of the agenda, Member Dongeni. Can we have a second?
Yes, Chair.
You can have a second.
Second in the that.
Thank you, members. Yeah. Members, we've got an apology from the deputy minister, who's got other business to attend, and we apologize for not attending this meeting. And there's also an apology from Member Lehi, who's also not been able to attend today's meeting. Can I ask the members if we can accept these two apologies? Member Chabaling, I see your hand.
An old hand.
Oh, okay. Then you must lower. Thank you. Can we have...
Chairperson?
Yes.
There was an apology from Mr. Pacha as well. He is also, he has other commitments, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Marcel. Members, so there's two members who won't be able to join the meeting, and then the Deputy Minister. Can we move for the adoption of the apologies?
Morning, Chair.
Lungeni, move
the adoption of the apologies.
Thank you, Member.
I second the
adoption
of the apologies.
Thanks a lot. So then, members, we accept the apologies for the two members who's unavailable, as well as the Deputy Minister. So allow me then, members, to, in this meeting, welcome all of you. Looking forward to a very fruitful discussion. Let me also take the opportunity to welcome the minister and also the department and the DG and minister. I think it will be very interesting to hear about the SRD grant. And also how far you have come in bringing this relief to the people of South Africa. I think we're still in Women's Month, and we all know that the people who suffer the most is the mothers who must keep their families up and running. And let's dedicate this meeting then to all the women, especially single moms, who is doing a brilliant job in raising their children, and also to let us also then appreciate that in this department, we've got the minister and the deputy minister that is both women, and they also feel the plight of our women in this country. Without any further ado, I will ask the minister for her input. Thank you, Minister. Minister Zulu. I think the minister is still muted. Minister Zulu.
Chair, through you, I suspect the minister dropped off because I can't see her anymore. Let's see if we can raise her.
Okay.
Chair Minister is reconnecting. She definitely did fall off. I just spoke to her. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. We'll wait for her now. Thank you. Is the minister on the platform?
Apologies, Chair. She's just quickly joining with her phone. Sorry for that inconvenience.
No, it's fine. It's fine. We will wait for her.
Hello.
Good morning, Minister. Welcome. You can continue with your input, Minister.
Okay, thank you very much. Apology, the gadgets are just not working well this morning. So I'm just using my cell phone. I hope I'm visible and audible enough. Honorable Chairperson of the Select Committee on Health and Social Services, honorable members of the Select Committee on Health and Social Services, Deputy Minister of Social Development, Acting Director General of the Department, Chief Executive Officer of South African Social Security, SASSA, Acting Chief Executive Officer of the National Development Agency, Senior Managers and Officials of the Department and Entities. Thank you very much for this opportunity, Honorable Chairperson. I'm hoping that also there are some South Africans who are logged in and who are going to be receiving also this report. Thank you for inviting myself and the Deputy Minister to present to you the offerings and interventions of the Department of Social Development, the South African Social Security Agency, on the social relief of distress, which is popularly known as SRD grant. The honorable members will recall that in preempting the deep impact that the advent of COVID-19 was going to have on the lives of ordinary people owing to lockdown measures on the social and economic activities, the sixth administration of our democratic government under the leadership of President Cyril Ramaphosa introduced COVID-19 SRD grant in May 2020. This was directed to be implemented by my department or our department, the Department of Social Development, through the South African Social Security Agency, SASSA, which is the one that under normal circumstances also distributes a social grant. While the first iteration of the grant ended in April 2021, the second implementation of this grant ended in March 2022. Currently, and was announced by President Cyril Ramaphosa in the 2022 State of the Nation Address, SASSA is implementing the third iteration of the SRD grant. Three primary factors underlie the continued implementation of this grant, namely, one, first, the ongoing impact of COVID-19 on the economy, measured by the massive job losses in among South Africans, as well as the slow recovery in many sectors. This necessitated the continued provision of income support to the poor and income-less population. Second, it has been established that the grant had a positive impact in reducing poverty and inequality in our country, especially poverty. In particular, it contributed to reduction in food insecurity among our country's most vulnerable. And third, research that was commissioned by the department found that in 95% of the cases, the beneficiaries use their money for food and followed by electricity. Chairperson, I also do want at this point to indicate that yesterday I was very excited when the Department of Social Development, when they were presenting their operational plans, one of the presentations that was made to us yesterday was about a young woman who used the 350 to start a business. And I think it will be quite exciting for Parliament, for committees of Parliament to follow up on this, because it was just unbelievable that this woman, who in my understanding just saw on the way, whenever she was going into town, she saw on the way white tunnels that were tattered and torn. And she started inquiring about what these tunnels are for. And she was informed that these tunnels were used by the community to grow vegetables. That's vegetables, and the business had collapsed. She took part of the 350 and went and did some research about what does this really mean and how does it work. And having that, and by the way, she was sitting at home with quite a number of qualifications. But I think because she's a young and dynamic woman, she's told herself she cannot be defeated. Now she is running that business. And if the information that I got yesterday is anything to go by, she's now making almost 9 million out of that. It's just a young woman who saw an opportunity, who didn't even know what this was all about, but she was determined that she was going to make it work after she researched to find out how does it work. And she called two of her friends to come along and work with her without any pay. So she revived the community project that fell apart, and she's now running it as a business. I think this is a good story to tell, and there are a number of other good stories to tell of people who were resilient enough to start as small and medium businesses just out of the 350. Because the third iteration of the grant came after the lifting of the state of national disaster in March 2022, the department had to develop new regulations by which it would continue to implement it under the Social Assistance Act. To implement the third iteration of the SRD grant, 44 billion was allocated to service 10.5 million people until the end of March 2023. The allocation falls short of the population of 10.9 million qualifying beneficiaries, whom we already had in March 2022, on the premise that the Public Finance Management Act requires us to stay within the allocation, we introduced additional qualifying criteria for the grant. These included the introduction of the means test threshold of 350 for all applicants. This was implemented by checking the bank accounts of each applicant monthly to establish if they had income flows valued at 350 or more into the bank account from other sources. The implementation of this provision was very challenging because we had to enter into negotiations with the banks for them to perform this means test, given that they are custodians of their clients' accounts. Consequently, in the first 3 months of implementation, we experienced very serious challenges whose net effect was the delay of the grant implementation for another 2 months. The most important challenge that we faced is the low uptake of the grant by less than 50 of the budgeted amount. The unfortunate implication of this may be that unspent monies may have to be returned to National Treasury. For us as the social development portfolio, this is very serious indictment because we continue to see the growing numbers of the hungry and distressed people in the communities where we work. And here, I do need to indicate, Chairperson, that as a Department of Social Development, together with SASSA, we still need to look at some policy positions or legislative positions that sometimes make it difficult for us to implement, because at the same time, we have to be accountable. We also have to be accountable to the Auditor General. And sometimes some of the very systems that we put in place, which, by the way, are correct and were correct from a point of view of ensuring accountability, but sometimes they make it very difficult for us. And therefore, we believe that we need to look in some of these together with Treasury. We note the public outcry regarding these qualifying criteria. In some instances, the courts have been approached seeking to declare these criteria unlawful. On Tuesday, 16th of August, we published the amended regulations that simplify some complexities that arise from the qualifying criteria. We are hoping that these will improve the grant uptake. Already at the beginning of August, SASSA had received just under 12 million applicants. The most important amendment we made was to increase the means test threshold from 350 to 624, which is estimated food poverty line for 2022. I can announce to this meeting that to this effect, I've received concurrence of the Minister of Finance. And here, Chairperson, also, I would like to indicate that when we were changing now the threshold to the 624, there was also a misunderstanding in the outside, in the public, that some people actually thought that we were increasing the 350 to 624. But we've had to go out and explain that that wasn't the case. It was a question of the increase the means test threshold from 350 to 624. Of the 11 million applications that we have received in June, 6.5 million were approved and almost 4 million received their grant payment. The assessments for the month of July experienced delays owing to the previous regulations requiring people to reconfirm their grants every 3 months, June falling on the third month, wherein these reconfirmations had to be done. Consequently, very few people reconfirm their grants. On the brighter side, with the new regulations having been publicized, the July assessment will soon be concluded. We are still having challenges with some payments wherein applicants have not provided us with their bank details. Consequently, we have encouraged applicants to provide us with their correct bank details so that we can timelessly facilitate their grant payments. To this end, SASSA will conduct ongoing communication and publicity so that the grant uptake is increased. Having done so, we are hopeful that a greater number of the qualifying people will be able to access the grant. We note that it is in the interest of the income-less, unemployable, and vulnerable sections of our population that government as a whole should develop a sound rationale for the continued provision of basic income grant support in the long term, as well as to improve the implementation of this grant. Equally, we note that the vast majority of South Africans prefer being in employment than to receive grant. Until such time that the economy has grown, we cannot helplessly sit by and watch the people lose their dignity. Honorable Chairperson, this, with your permission, please allow me to ask the Department of the Department and SASSA to present the Social Relief of Distress Grant provision and interventions. Honorable members, please receive the presentation, and I then hand over to the department, and thank you for the opportunity.
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Minister. This is Brenda Sibeko. Let me begin by apologizing for DG. He's on leave and he has asked me to stand in for him at least for this meeting. And I want to just begin also to greet all of the honorable members of the Select Committee. We really appreciate the opportunity to share with you the work we've been doing on the SRD grant. As Minister was saying, we do view this as a very important platform on which you can build the provision of decent social assistance for people in the age group of 19 to 59, and we are really hoping that we can use this grant and the successes of its implementation as a foundation for building a longer-term basic income support for that age group. Minister, when you were saying at the moment, you know, when you were reporting on the lady who is the successful business person who started with the 350 grant, I thought it would be interesting to tell the committee now that actually that lady is attending our workshop today. And yesterday and today, we are having a workshop on how to develop, how to finalize, and how to strengthen the proposals on basic income support. And she's actually attending that here just to help us think through it, because we thought that amount of talent, it's important for us to draw from the wisdom of people who are actually living on the 350 grant, and also help us to think about how to extend it to more people and how to build from what we have started. And so she's at this workshop now. It's really inspirational story that we are happy to report to the select committee. The DG has asked me to stand in, as I said, but I will not give the presentation. I think that having had the opening remarks from Minister, it's appropriate to just rather allow our colleague from SASSA, Brenton Panfrere, to then take us through the actual detailed presentation of what we have done so far on the SRD grant. If you allow, I'd like to just hand over to him. He's in the meeting now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Members of Parliament, Minister, Acting DG, CEO, SASSA colleagues.
You are muted, Brenta. And Brenton, can you also make
good
sure
morning.
That you open your video, please? So
good morning, Chairperson. My apologies. I was talking to myself, being muted. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Members of Parliament, Minister, CEO, colleagues, and members of the public. Chairperson, if I could get permission to share the presentation. Thanks. Let me just quickly put that up. As the DDG mentioned, I will briefly take us through the presentation on the request that we share the COVID-19 share the COVID-19 social leave of distress provisions interventions that the select committee requested us to do. I will go through just a summary. I think it's important if we just look at a little bit of the history and the background around where the COVID-19 SRD provisions have come from, in particular this year. Then we'll look at some of the statistics in terms of applications by gender, province, various demographics. We also have additional information that we've collected in this round, which I think is very useful. Information that we'll also share with the committee. We'll look at payments, we'll look at the appeals, which is now an independent process, and then we will look at some of the challenges and some of the impacts that some of the research that DSD has done in previous years, and then conclude. So just in terms of the contextual background, as members will recall, the President announced in his State of the Nation address earlier this year that the COVID-19 SRD will be extended. This then required DSD to urgently develop regulations for this grant, and the regulations were promulgated on the 22nd of April, and the application channels were opened at midnight the next day. But the systems for the actual assessments and that was one of the challenges that we experienced, which we were still in development stage, but we did open the application channels immediately so that at least we could begin to take applications for the new grant. Now, this grant is derived or is very similar to the previous COVID-19 SRD grant that was under the disaster management framework, but this third iteration, because at that time we were aware that the state of disaster would be lifted soon, The third iteration involved us to shift from this new form of SRD from the sort of Disaster Management Act, or the directions within the Disaster Management Act, where the previous SRD was provided for, to the social assistance legislative framework, which also makes provision for social relief of distress. And DSD thus had to provide or create or develop new regulations for this. And as mentioned, just published by the minister on the 22nd of April. By implication, because this was within a new legislative framework, essentially it was a new grant, and this thus required that people would have to reapply for the grant. But also we, as Minister mentioned, because of the limited budget that we got for this grant, we could only target 10 million people. In the previous iteration, we reached about just over 11 million people. We had to tighten up the qualifying criteria a little bit to ensure that we don't overshoot the budget that we were provided with. So in terms of the third iteration of this grant, as mentioned, it's no longer within the Disaster Management Act, but now within the social assistance framework. But it's run still on a very similar premise to the previous grant. Once again, it is only apply for it through digital channels, which includes our WhatsApp channel, our website, and currently we are working on a mobile app, which we hope at least the Android version. There's been some progress on that, and we hope that we'll be able to release that in the course of the year. One of the new requirements of this legislation, in addition to a sort of a standard declaration that people would sign, we've also introduced a screening questionnaire to improve the screening of applicants up front, which includes collection of personal information such as ID numbers, addresses, contact details, and so forth. Banking details are also required, but we also collect additional questions. We also have additional questions that ask for education and employment details, because one of the requirements, which I'll mention a bit later, is sort of the link to employment. And so we do ask people to share a little bit more of this information about themselves in terms of how they sustain themselves and their employment history and experience. We do then also continue to do database checks in the background to determine qualifying criteria for this grant. And the set of databases that we've maintained for this round is the National Population Register administered by the Department of Home Affairs to confirm identity. We also check our software database to ensure that you're not getting another grant, but obviously the child grants, if you're getting any one of the three child grants, you do qualify for this grant. We check the income database, the IFP5 database from SARS, which is an indicator of income. We check the UIF databases. It's both the contributors database, which if you are contributing to UIF, it's an indication of some level of employment. We also check the payments database, and as well as the TERS benefit database, if you're getting payments or TERS from UIF. We also check the NSFAS database, the various government employee databases, such as PASEL, PASOL, and GPF. And then we check also if you are, for example, an inmate in one of the correctional services. And then the new instrument that we introduce in this version of the grant, which I'll speak to a bit later as well, is we then do means testing through the banks as well. So in terms of the new provision, in this regulations, we implemented a proxy means test consisting of checks against databases that may indicate income or alternative financial assistance and or verification of insufficient means within banks. Now, to facilitate that digitally, because it's not that easy to use algorithms to perfectly determine people's income, we had to use a sort of very blunt instrument to be able to figure out what kind of income people are getting within their bank accounts and hence the definition for insufficient means in this particular version of the regulations is very broad to include all forms of income flowing into your bank account. When we implemented this, or when we published these regs, we did note that there would be significant implementation risk because the test through the banks is not completely new. We have done it, but on a very, very limited scale before. In the past, what we did was we would assess you against the databases. If you were then disqualified or declined, you could then lodge an appeal, and then we would check your bank account to determine whether or not you had any kind of income. So, for example, if we found you on the UIF database, but then you said, but I'm not on UIF, you could lodge an appeal. We would then check your bank account. We would see if there's money. If there was no money coming in to your account, we could then safely assume you weren't getting any income. And then your appeal would be successful. In this round, because we had to separate appeals from the application process, we then thought, let's do it all up front. Let's check bank accounts up front in the application testing. But again, we've never done it at that large scale. And we did experience some teething problems when we implemented this grant, and I'll speak to some of those teething problems we've experienced a little bit later, but that did cause us to sort of have that delayed start in the grant, and we're still experiencing some challenges with that. As also mentioned earlier on, given the limited budget, the grant was implemented at a relatively low threshold at the time, relying on the best survey data that we had available. We were very cautious with setting that threshold because even at the levels of 350 where it was set initially, there was, at least from survey data, some indication that there would be some overspending. But DSD then did make the commitment to say, once we start doing these assessments, we will immediately review the threshold if it is found to be too low. And I think that's what DSD done. Once we've done the June assessments, which was when we sort of started, immediately after that, in July, DSD published new regulations for public comment. In the first week of July, those closed at the end of July, and then the minister published it in August. In this round of the grant, we also implemented an additional clause, which was also a little bit problematic, but it had required people to reconfirm the grant every 3 months, and this has been removed from the new regulations that were published in August. And we also implemented a condition that in this regulation that clients should not unreasonably refuse to access employment or educational opportunities if these were to become available. And to this extent, SASA is in the processes of entering into agreements with the Department of Public Works and the Department of Employment and Labor to facilitate data sharing between these parties. As the minister mentioned, that we did have some challenges around the regulations. One of the biggest challenges was that the threshold was too low, and we didn't see the kind of numbers that we were expecting to see, and hence an urgent amendment was then made to the regulations to revise the threshold, which has now revised that threshold from 350 rands to 624 rands. In addition, that the clause that required people to reconfirm every 3 months was also removed. And another clause, which was there to enable us to be able to differentiate between data checks which were conflicting between, say, the banks and some of the other data checks, that clause is also removed. And DSD then issued a practice note in that extent to guide us in terms of how to write our algorithms for those assessments. So in terms of implementation, as of the beginning of August, we got just under 12 million applications. Very similar to the previous iteration of the grants, we have slightly more female applicants than male applicants. We also do provide for non-citizens, permanent residents, refugees, and asylum seekers. The numbers are, however, very small in terms of asylum seekers. We just over 25,000 that have applied for the grant. In terms of age, very, very similar to the last iteration of the grant, around just over 60% of the applicants are youth under the ages of 35. And then in terms of level of education, we'll see that the vast majority of applicants, more than 93% of the applicants, have some level of schooling, be it primary schooling, the majority either with a grade 10 or grade 12. And we have a few applicants, about 5%, 600,000 applicants, who also have tertiary qualifications. In terms of payments, at present, about in April, we got just under 4 million of the, just under 5 million, 4.7 million people were approved, and about 80% paid. In May, we got about 5.7 million was approved, and by June, 6.5 million people were approved, and our payment rate was just over 80% on that at the moment. And as Minister mentioned earlier on, we do have quite a number of challenges in the payment that's not allowing us to get to that 100%. Many of the times people have not put proper bank details in. Sometimes they forget a digit or they get their name. The name doesn't correspond with the banking details. And we get a lot of bank verification failure. We're also having a slight challenge with our cash send option at the moment, which we hope to resolve in this month. And there's a few applicants who have selected that as a payment rate. In this new iteration of the grant, as mentioned earlier on, we separated appeals. Appeals are now conducted independently through the Independent Tribunal for Social Assistance Appeals, which is very similar to the previous grant. In the previous disaster management framework, SASSA did both the applications and the appeals, but now that we're operating more in the sort of constitutional framework and social assistance legislative framework, appeals are done independently, as with the other grants. And as a result, we opened the appeals process on the 27th of June, just after we've done the first assessment. And to date, they have cumulatively collected about 2.5 million appeals. In April, they had about 769,000 appeals. In May, 100,000 appeals, and in June, just under 1.3 million appeals. And again, important to note that because this grant is assessed on a monthly basis, you need to appeal every month that you've been rejected. The appeals process, similar to the appeals process for the other grants, that the appeals tribunal has to adjudicate these appeals within a period of 90 days. And this does give them the opportunity then that if a database, for example, UAF database or so forth, may not have been properly updated from the Department of Labor or the agency that we receive it from, hopefully by the time it reaches an appeal, they may have a more recent or up-to-date database. Then in terms of some of the additional questions that we've asked this time around, one of the interests was we wanted to get a sense of how people meet their basic needs or survive on a month-to-month basis. And the vast majority of people said that they either get support from a family member, either inside the household or outside the household, or a friend inside or outside the household. So that would account for about 56% from family and another 11% from friends. So that would be about 67% of people, more than two-thirds of people, are being supported by friends or family, which again makes a very strong case for for basic income support if one considers these informal transfers between family members and friends as a form of informal taxes and informal grants. It really then just means at the societal level, you know, society is already providing for its people and looking after its people in these informal processes. And all government really needs to do is to formalize these so that the tax and transfer mechanisms that are used are a lot more fair and equitable in that. And then other reasons, about 10% said they were engaging in casual work, or some had some savings and so forth. In terms of daily activities, we also ask people, you know, what do they do on a day-to-day basis? And again, about 65% of people said, you know, they either engage in some form of self-employment, trying to do something on the side to make some money, or 54% were actively searching for a job, and then smaller percentages doing other things, such as either maybe a homemaker looking after children, was about 6%, or helping out in a family business without pay, was 5%. And unemployed, but very few people were actually said they're unemployed and not looking for work. There's about 8% that said that. And some interns in non-family businesses, but unpaid, 7%. And then because our income, we realized our income data at this very low level of income wasn't that accurate, we did also ask people to tell us sort of what kind of income bands they fell into. And about 10 million people told us actually that they were below, earning incomes below the 350. But again, this may not be that accurate because when we did these assessments, we actually got much, much lower numbers. And about 11.5 million told us that they are earning incomes below the food poverty line. And that gradually increases to about 12 million, just below the upper poverty line. In terms of payments, this is one of the areas where we had some challenges. As Minister mentioned, when we implemented this grant, we had to develop and implement this new system of income checking with the banks, which was quite an extensive system. It's probably one of the biggest electronic systems that we've developed so far. And we didn't necessarily have the luxury that you, under normal circumstances, when you do this, you build something, you test it, you pilot it, and then you implement it. And that probably would take in itself about a year to do. In a very short space of a matter of months, we had to build and implement without necessarily being able to do a proper test and a sort of proper piloting to make sure that everything's working fine. So we did have quite a number of teething problems with the systems. But also it caused us to have a little bit of a delay. As a result, we only started doing the assessments in June, and we then made a commitment to clear the backlogs, so we generated backlogs for April and May, and made the commitment then to say that in April we will pay May together with the July payment, and in May we would pay August. Sorry, in August we'll pay May together with the August payments, with the hope that by August we would clear these backlogs. However, due to changes in the regulations and the removal of reconfirmation, so if you recall in the first regulations, we had a section that said every 3 months people had to reconfirm, but we've then got very few reconfirmations, just about 1.5 million people reconfirmed, which meant that if we did proceed with the July payment, we would have basically excluded millions of people from this grant. So what we then did was we swapped the May file out and we made the May payments in July instead of August, as we committed to doing. And then the July file will now assess in August post the publication of the regulations, and a lot more people will then qualify for the grant. August payments may be slightly delayed. For the August payments, we have to implement a new threshold, which means we have to then go and to swap over between, because we're running July and August, we're running it on the old threshold, and then the August one, we're going to have to then swap around and just get the new threshold done with the banks. We will try and do it still before the month of August. We will, if we complete July in this week, we'll probably start August next week, but we are experiencing some problems as well that is causing us to have a little bit of delays in the current week. So the August may spill over to September. And I think we're sort of beginning to clear April and June with some further guidance and practice note that was issued by DSD. We will also see some additional approvals coming through for April and June as well. So just in terms of errors that we picked up in the early stages, for example, one bank algorithm was written incorrectly, that was incorrectly showing income below a threshold, and this caused us then to slightly overpass about 30,000 people or so. Fortunately, most of them, we didn't make payments when we picked it up, and we were able to reverse that. We did also have some of the banks in the algorithms incorrectly excluding the CSG money into income. So we do also have a number of CSG recipients that were excluded from, incorrectly excluded from the grant. That's also now being fixed, and in the July run, we should have corrected that, and all those applicants would then now qualify and get backdated their monies for the grant. And then I suppose one of the biggest challenges that we're currently also facing in year is that no additional funding, unlike last year, no additional funding was allocated to SASSA for the administration of this grant. So we're having to, in the middle of the year, cut our budgets and find savings from all places to try and fund the sort of administrative fees for this grant, which is causing us a few challenges internally in terms of being able to move with speed and procure various services and so forth. And then just in terms of impact, so this grant, and this is some research that DSD has done in previous year, has shown that this grant has been immensely useful, even though that it is just 350, it's a very small amount. So some of the findings from their rapid assessment shows that the grant was mainly used by food, electricity, clothing, transport, that most of these goods that were purchased are all goods that can be supplied within local economies, and there's quite a lot of evidence that the grant actually boosts and supports local economies. In some new research that DSD is doing, which they will probably release in the next month or two, they will actually show the very positive effect that a grant of this nature can have, particularly on more rural provinces. I think in provinces like Gauteng and the Western Cape, the impact is relatively neutral, but in provinces like Limpopo and the Northwest and so forth, you see massive boosts to the economies in those provinces. Most of the respondents to the surveys that were done said that even though the grant was small, it made a positive difference in their lives as well as their households. And most believe that because of the high levels of poverty and inequality in the country, that this grant should be continued. So, Honorable Chair, I'm going to leave it there and hope that the committee notes the update and provides and be available to answer any questions and comments. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you to the department. Members, please allow me to leave my video off because I'm experiencing some network problems where I am this morning. I will now allow for the members to raise their hands if they've got any questions or any clarity seeking questions for this discussion period. Thank you. The floor is open, members. any member for any clarity seeking? Or are you satisfied with the presentation? Member Chabaling?
Chair?
Yes.
I just want to check if there are duplications, because you know we give arts, sports and culture give relief to artists who are affected by the lockdown. I just want to check if there's no duplication where they'll get something from SASSA and others will get, you know, some form of double dipping. That's all.
Thank you, Member Chabaling. Any other member for clarity seeking?
Yes, Chair, it's Ndongeni.
Thank you, Member Ndongeni. You can continue.
Thank you, Chair. Can the department clarify whether previous approved grant receipts who were due to receive a payment in April 2022 will still receive this payment regardless of whether your annual application is approved or not, in addition with those who applied under the new framework, be back paid for April 2022? The second one, how many are still pending? What are the implications of the duration of the appeals process? How many appeals have been? Okay, sorry. The last one, you know? That clarity is needed on the application of this provision because of the practical difficulties that may be faced by agents when implementing the provision. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Member Dongeni. I see the end of Member Christian.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. I'd also just have one or two questions. The grant expires in March 2023. What is in place as a basic income support for those in need after March 2023? Or are there talks within the department to extend this grant? Or is the basic income grant still on the table? And then the 350 grant is very much needed by our communities, especially after COVID and especially due to the financial and economic climate that we are experiencing currently. But what are the plans of the department to assist recipients to be less reliant on social assistance? Are there any plans from the Department of Social Development to assist perhaps in assisting not recipients but poorer communities with business development and any other avenues of getting an income? And then lastly, food security is likely a huge issue in the country. Now, recently we've heard that in certain prisons that the prisoners are, you know, busy developing their own gardens and they are growing their own food, etc. So I want to know from the department, is there collaboration with these prisons? Because what came out of their committee as well was that these prisons are giving their food to the needy. Has that been the case? Because we haven't seen it anywhere. So has prisons been identifying needy in conjunction with the Department of Social Development, and how has that worked? But more especially, what interventions does the Department of Social Development have to ensure food security in South Africa, which is currently, I believe, one of the greatest issues, as we see so many children on the streets recently. It has increased 100-fold. Children who are just walking the streets begging for something to eat. And with that, also, what is being done about these children that are standing on our street corners begging for food because they are so hungry because there's nothing at home? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Christians. I don't see any other hands. Mine is very simple. I just want to find out from the department. Apparently, there is members of the public receiving the SMSs from the department with dates that the grant will be in their account. I've got a few inquiries in my constituency about this. But when they go to the post office or to the bank, there is no money being deposited even a week or two after the date that they received. Do you experience any difficulty somewhere that a message goes out to some recipients and then the message is not implemented by the payout? Maybe you're experiencing a problem that you can explain to the public out there, or I don't know why this is happening. Thank you then. Minister, I think that is the question. I will hand back to you. Thank you, Minister. Is the minister on the platform? I don't know if it's my network, but I can't hear anything. Oh, sorry, here you are. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you for the questions. It seems Minister might be having difficulties again with her connection, but I suggest that we take some of the questions. I will deal with some of them and then ask my colleagues to assist. The ones that I will deal with have to, the first one will be regarding the previous approved applications in April. Remember, the April applications will be in line with the new regulations. So yes, those will be paid and should have been paid. If the person had applied in April, because SASSA has already completed the approvals for April and made the payments, it might be some of the people have not received, if perhaps there's difficulties with their bank accounts and so on. But we have actually dealt with the April applications already. They were dealt with in June, Brenton. They were dealt with in June. So those who applied in April would have been applying in terms of the new regulations and they would have received. Those who had applied in the previous iteration, there were those who were appeals and so on, and those also were addressed. With regards to the question around what is going to be in place, given that this grant expires at the end of the financial year. Yes, the department is working in that regard. We are engaging with different departments, including the National Treasury, around how to address the continuing income need post the end of the financial year. The consideration in that respect is work on how to create a basic income support program for people. And that's part of the work that we are doing in the department now. Of course, decisions have not been made as yet, but one of the things that we are taking cognizance of is that even if that policy gets approved, we will still need to write the legislation in that respect, and that takes a bit of time. So one of the things we are proposing is that this grant should be continued beyond this current financial year while we get the final policy and the legislative processes in place. So the proposal that GSD is working on now is how to extend this current social relief of distress grant, and then going forward to, once the legislation is done, then implement basic income support. So that's how we are proposing to address the matter. And then with respect to the issues relying on what are we doing about people who are relying on grants, there is a lot of work that the department has been doing over the years, and we have really strengthened that work in this current year in terms of making sure that we link those grant beneficiaries to economic opportunities. There's work in the department on sustainable livelihoods. I had hoped my colleague, Mr. Neshipale, would be able to talk a little bit about the sustainable livelihood program, but also the work that is also being done with the presidential employment stimulus to ensure that those people are also being assisted to access job opportunities, and also engagements with the Department of Small Business and Development to also help those who are able to start businesses to also be able to get assisted to do that. But obviously, all of those interventions are important, but they will not necessarily be able to cover all 10.5 million people that are currently in the grants program. So we are working, we expect this to be an ongoing work in collaboration with other government departments to enable these people to be able to augment their incomes and not only rely on the 350. And in that respect, this is work that is ongoing, and it's partly why SASSA is collecting additional information about grant beneficiaries, so that we're able to say these ones have a degree, is there any way that they can be assisted to start small businesses? These ones have a matric, is there any way that they can be assisted also to start other initiatives and also to get into jobs? But this is ongoing work that the department is doing in collaboration with other departments. And then on the question of the issues of food and children who are begging in the street, this is a very, very big challenge for the department, in that although we are providing the child support grant, the amount of money that it gives, of course, is not sufficient for it's below the food poverty line, and there's work that the department is doing in terms of trying to find other ways to ensure that people are accessing food. The department has different, what we call CNDCs, community nutrition and development centers across the country, which also provide additional food to food insecure households. But in terms of the work with the Department of Correctional Services around the prisons, I would just request that we are allowed, in the absence of Mr. Neshipale, to actually respond to that one in writing, because I'm not au fait with the details of whether there is collaboration or not. I am aware that there is a collaboration with the Department of Agriculture, but whether there is also collaboration with the Department of Correctional Services on that specific program, I think Mr. Neshipale might be closer to that, and we will therefore request that we be allowed to give that response in writing. And then I will defer to Mr. Fanfredo on the questions around the Okay, there's a question also on appeals. The appeals process, one of the things that we are trying to do, Chairperson, is that we make sure that when people appeal, because now it's no longer being done by SASSA, and many of the appeals have to do with the fact that people are reflected in either the UIF database or the SARS database when they're actually no longer there. There's a time lag between when the person no longer gets a benefit from UIF and when they are removed from the database. So what we are doing is we are allowing the appeals tribunal to look for later data, updated data from these institutions, so that when they do the appeals assessment, they use updated information to make sure that people who were perhaps erroneously excluded because of the wrong database are now going to be able to be using updated data to do the assessment, in which case we expect that then there'll be a more accurate assessment of that person. There's a time lag in that regard, because the appeals tribunal has a 90-day time frame within which they must review in order to enable the databases to have been updated. So the appeals will only be, once SASSA has given us all the details of the people who have been, while we have the information of all the people who have appealed, then the tribunal will go and request data, updated data from UIF and all of these other institutions and run the assessment on the same basis but with updated data. There's a time lag because we want to allow those institutions to have updated their information. So there'll be a 2 to 3 month time lag. We're expecting that now from the end of August onwards, they will start now dealing with the appeals from April onwards in order to then make sure that people who were erroneously excluded are included. There's just a time lag because of the need to make sure that we use updated information. I think that covers that one. The other questions Mr. Van Strede will deal with relating to specific implementation from SASSA side. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think there's just two questions on implementation that are left that Mr. Sobeko didn't deal with. The first question was around any duplications or possible double dipping from departments like departments of arts and culture. So in the previous iteration of this grant, when those departments did make these provisions available, it was the Department of Arts and Culture, Sports, Agriculture, there was something for farmers, there was also something from small business for spaza shops and small businesses. So we did have those databases and we did check those databases, but I believe in this, since the lifting of the state of disaster, a lot of that relief has fallen away. And we're no longer checking those databases in the new iteration of the grant, but in the previous iterations of the grants, we did check those databases to try and prevent double dipping. Then the question around payments, which the chairperson raised, we do experience difficulties or sometimes with payments. So maybe first thing to note is that we don't use the post office anymore for payments, but we have expanded the payment system through the post bank with their network of merchants. So where previously there may have been 1,000 so post office where people could withdraw their grants, there are now tens of thousands of merchants that are associated with the post bank where people can withdraw their money. The system has had some teething problems in the beginning, but some of the main challenges is people not updating, for example, their data. So for you to withdraw your money, for example, at any one of the merchants, you would get an SMS. So you'd need your ID, but you'd also get an SMS. And often what happens is people change their phone numbers. And so you would go to the merchant, when you apply for the grant, you would use one phone number. You would get that SMS to that phone number. But maybe by the time you withdraw your money, you have another phone number and that SMS isn't coming through to you. So we do ask people to keep their contact details updated with us on a regular basis, but also noting that there is a little bit of a delay, so you can't change your phone number today and then want to go draw your money tomorrow. We only put, you know, the data sharing for this grant between the various organizations only flow on a monthly basis. So that does create a little bit of challenge if you do change any of your contact details in the middle of the month. We did also experience some load shedding problems with post bank's head office, where the generator was also faulty for certain periods of time in over the last few months. But I think generally, and obviously when the main system at the sort of post bank head office is down, then access to that system becomes difficult. But I do think most of those challenges have also been resolved and has been up and running. So our main challenge still remains just with people changing their phone numbers and then the SMS is going to old numbers and they're not getting the withdrawal SMSs. Also, we do have a challenge. Sometimes people withdraw more money than they actually have in their account. So a lot of people complain that they get a notification that says insufficient funds. So what that means is if you've got 350 in your account and you draw 700, you're gonna get a message that says you don't have money in your account. And so sometimes people don't check and companies, the merchants do show them how to check by using the various USD codes to see how much money is in the account, so that when you withdraw, you don't withdraw more than what you actually have in the account. Thanks, Jefferson.
Thank you very much. Members, do you have any follow-up questions?
Chairperson, I trust that covers all of the questions that were raised, except for the one that you said you will respond in writing regarding the food program in the gardens and food program in prisons. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that answering session. I just want to find out from the members if there's anyone who still got a follow-up question. If not, because I don't see any hands, let me take the opportunity to thank DSD and SASA. I don't know what's all in this meeting. And then also to the minister for honoring the invitation to come before the select committee. I think a lot of issues has been clarified. And if the minister is still here, I would love her to give us some closing remarks if she is still on the platform. Is the minister still on the platform?
It seems that the minister is having connection problems. So I don't know if the meeting wants to wait for her.
No, it's fine, my dear. If the minister is experiencing problems, it's fine. She did give us an opening remarks. I'm also struggling with my
name. I'm just checking if she's able to connect again.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, sir, we can hear you.
Chairperson, it seems Minister has lost connectivity. I'm not getting a response from her.
It's fine, Brenda. It's fine. I also experienced a very, very bad connectivity this morning. So let me then thank you and your yes, Member Chabale.
Yeah, and I was going to suggest, because you know the of this reception thing and the fact that we have a sitting today.
Yes.
So, you know, it's not a very good day for us.
Yeah.
Maybe suggesting that, and that even the lines, I mean, you know, the connections, it's not so good. Mm. But maybe some of the questions that we have will send to the department and then, you know, get the written responses to some of the clarities that we need from them.
Thank you, Member Chabaleng, for that progressive proposal. On that note, I would love then to ask the department to then exit the meeting. Thank you very much for all of your attendance this morning so that we can continue with our business. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm sorry. Minister
has been able to join. Oh,
Minister is here. Minister. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, Chairperson. It's just the network is so bad. So can I keep myself off the camera, because the network is very bad. And I was afraid of picking up Brenda's call because I'm using the phone. I was afraid of being disconnected. But Chairperson, I don't really have much to say, save to thank you and thank the members for the contribution, but also issues that are raised, we will try our best to continuously find solutions, Chairperson. I'm really sorry. I was in that in the whole presentation, but I just lost connectivity at the wrong time. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you for always availing yourself to come before the Select Committee. I'm experiencing the same problem like you. The network is bad where I am at the moment. So thanks a lot. And then with that, we will excuse the minister and the department members so that we can continue with our administrative business. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Bye.
Yeah, I want to try to take the bushery I want to. The meat is to look very fresh.
Local, you know, members, I'm talking to myself. I was muted. Sorry. So we've got the draft minutes of our committee of the 16th of August with the agenda of the briefing by the NYDA and the report on youth development initiatives. We received this minutes from Marcia before this meeting. So I would just like to ask members if there was any corrections that you would like to bring under our attention on this minute. If there's no corrections, members, can I ask for a mover for the adoption of the minutes and also a seconder?
I move for the adoption of the minutes, Chair.
Thank you, Member Chabaling. Who was the other voice that I heard there? Lai?
Yes, it was me.
Okay. Okay, do you second?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you, Member Laili. Members, if there's no any other business, I can adjourn the meeting. Is there any other issue? If not, thank you very much, members, and our staff members. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Members, did you hear me?
Chairperson, they are leaving. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Marcel. My network is so bad. I just go into dips every time.
No, it's fine, Chair. I'll end the meeting now. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Chair.
Recording stopped.